AOPA presents Never Again, true pilot stories from the world of general aviation. In this episode, a student pilot learns that a GPS screen can be a dangerous distraction as well as an important tool. Find out what happens in An Illuminating Experience by Allison Happ. On a cool but clear April evening, instead of doing homework for my AP English and biology classes, I drove the 50 minutes from my home in Sandy, Utah to the Heber Airport, 3-6 uniform, for the night cross-country portion of my flight training. I had recently completed my introduction to night flying with a local flight after dark and takeoff and landing practice. I adjusted easily to night flying, soon finding that the same techniques I used during my daylight landings applied as well. Driving through the canyon en route to the airport, I noticed that there were light clouds hugging the peaks, though the weather report I had called for a half an hour ago reported mostly clear skies that were expected to remain for the rest of the evening. Arriving at the airport, I met with my flight instructor to go over our flight plan for the night. Our cross-country would take us from Heber to Ogden, Kilo Oscar Golf Delta, a city 50 miles to the northwest. The route was simple, following Interstate 80 through Parley's Canyon, which connected the Park City and Heber Valleys to the Salt Lake Valley. Following I-80 was practical and efficient, and avoided the need to climb above the tall mountain ranges rising to 9,602 feet off of our left wing and 7,869 feet off of our right. Once we exited the canyon, we planned to turn northbound, passing Salt Lake City International Airport and Hill Air Force Base en route to Ogden. Soon after sunset, I finished my pre-flight, and my flight instructor and I buckled in and closed the canopy on the Diamond Katana. We took off to the west and circled and climbed slowly into the twilight, joining our flight path to the north. I found that the little anxiety I had while taxiing to the runway gradually wore away as we climbed higher into the air. As we reached our cruise altitude of 8,500 feet, I knew we were laterally well clear of the tall mountains on either side of us, but found it slightly unsettling not to be able to see the ominous peaks I knew were out there. The 35-minute flight went smoothly, with the only real complication being the overly bright GPS screen on the panel, which started to distract me and made it more difficult to see outside of the cockpit. Try as I might to adjust the screen, I soon realized the only immediate solution was to shield the glare by holding a sectional chart over the GPS screen. When we exited Parley's Canyon, I contacted Salt Lake City Approach. The controller cleared us into the Class Bravo as we continued north up the valley. As we entered into a traffic pattern at Ogden, I realized how generously lit it was compared to the rural Heber Airport. I eased down to the ground for a quick stop-and-go before climbing back into the sky once again. As we climbed, I found myself with a new confidence. The flight was already halfway through, and the route back would be simple and familiar. There was hardly anything to worry about. My mind was already on the ground, satisfied with a successful flight. A few minutes later, the situation changed entirely. In the time since our departure from Heber, the sky had darkened completely, and the GPS was now consuming my full attention. Although I was convinced there was a function on the GPS to dim the screen, no amount of searching and scanning through the menus could locate it. A slight panic began to creep in as my night vision continued to deteriorate. I struggled to fight the helplessness while fiddling with the GPS, communicating with Salt Lake City Approach, and finding my return course to Heber. I had explained our intentions to the air traffic controller when we departed from Ogden, stating that we would remain east of I-15, heading south until we reached Parley's Canyon, where we would turn eastbound for Heber. A few minutes later, I was surprised to hear her call through the darkness. Katana 72 Delta Charlie, were you planning on turning eastbound to Parley's Canyon? I was confused as to why she was reaffirming my plans, but replied right away, "Affirmative, we will be turning up Parley's right now." as I immediately pointed our nose east and followed canyon lights once again. Soon it was time to switch back to the Heber Unicom. As if on cue, the turbulence increased as we entered the canyon. We were still trying to dim the GPS, although it seemed like a lost cause. The wings were shaking, and I found the nagging feeling from earlier hadn't left yet. Something just didn't seem quite right, and it wasn't only the GPS. There weren't as many car lights in the canyon as there were on the flight out. Yes, it was later at night, but the traffic was significantly reduced. What was more, a couple of miles in front of the nose, the street lights lining the canyon road seemed to disappear completely, which was definitely not right. The nagging feeling was now approaching panic. In the middle of the turbulence, I came to a terrifying realization that we were not in Parley's Canyon at all. We had continued too far and had turned down Mill Creek Canyon several miles further south. Although we had a fully functioning GPS in front of us, all of our energy was focused on adjusting it and not following its navigational guidance. The air traffic controller's concern suddenly made perfect sense. Realizing our error, I immediately thought about one thing: altitude. I had chosen to follow Parley's because it cut a path between two high mountain ranges. Now we were rocketing up a canyon surrounded by even higher mountains. Looming somewhere in the dark to the north of us was Mount Air at 8,622 feet, and Mount Olympus towered at 10,250 feet directly south of us. We needed to climb. I immediately increased power and pulled the stick back, hoping our trip wouldn't end up on the side of a mountain. As I was talking over a plan with my flight instructor, a severe bump shook the airplane, knocking her head against the canopy and lifting me completely from my seat. I was terrified, but forced myself to think only of survival. I took a deep breath, gave my shoulder harness a good tug, and continued to climb blindly above the dark void below. At last, we cleared the dark peaks at the end of Mill Creek Canyon, although I'll never really know by how much. In the distance, we saw the familiar and now unmistakable glow of I-80 snaking through the lower canyon, and I pointed the airplane in that direction with enormous relief. As we drew closer to the oasis of Park City, the air smoothed out, as did my waves of anxiety. After finally landing back at Heber, our post-flight briefing brought up several important issues and critiques of my decisions. Although the GPS was a very important tool and offered a wealth of information for my flight, unfamiliarity with the most basic settings was ultimately what caused critical complications during the flight. Little nighttime flying experience meant I wasn't even aware of the problem until I was swimming in the middle of it. Should I have spent more time with my GPS manual? Should I have turned around once I realized our mistake and rejoined Parley's Canyon? Should I have reconfirmed with our air traffic controller? Safe on the ground on my drive home through Parley's Canyon, I glanced up at the unforgiving black peaks and promised myself one thing. The ever-so-elusive brightness setting will be the first thing I'll locate on every future GPS I use as a pilot.
The Never Again Podcast is brought to you by AOPA, the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association, and by the Air Safety Foundation. You can read more Never Again stories online at aopa.org/neveragain. You can also visit the Air Safety Foundation at aopa.org/asf. The Never Again Podcast is produced by Royce Earle. Thanks for listening. Fly safe.